WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, sitting in for Terry Gross.
There's more to this than I thought, Charlie. I'm telling you, there's a lot more.
You don't mean that you're thinking of testifying against some people that we might know?
I don't know, Charlie. I mean, I'm telling you, I don't know, Charlie. That's what I want to talk to you about.
Listen, Terry, you know how much those peers are worth that we control through the local?
I know that.
All right, you think that Johnny's going to jeopardize the whole setup for one rubber-lipped ex-tanker
don't
who's walking
that
on his heels? What the?
Been better.
That's not the point.
I could have been a lot better,
the
Charlie.
The point is we don't have much time.
I'm telling you, I haven't made up my mind
yet. Well, make up your mind before we get to 437 River Street.
On the Waterfront, the classic 1954 film about corruption on the docks, starred Marlon Brando as Terry Malloy, a boxer-turned-dock worker who risks his life to testify against the mobsters who control the Longshoremen's Union. Bud Schulberg won an Academy Award for the screenplay. Schulberg died on Wednesday. He was 95. Today we'll listen back to interviews about On the Waterfront with Bud Schulberg and with Eva Marie Saint, who starred in the film opposite Brando. We'll start with Elia Kazan, who directed the film. Some critics interpreted On the Waterfront as a rationalization for informing. Kazan and Schulberg were both members of the Communist Party in the 30s, and both named names in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee in the early 50s. Kazan's other films include A Streetcar Named Desire, East of Eden, Splendor in the Grass, Baby Doll, and A Face in the Crowd. He's regarded as one of the best directors in American stage and film and was a founder of the Actor's Studio, where the acting technique known as the method was taught. Terry spoke with Kazan in 1988, 5 years before his death in 2003.
I want to play one of the most famous scenes in movie history. And this is the I could have been a contender scene. Now, in your book, you're very self-effacing about it. You say that you've been highly praised for the direction of the scene, but the truth is you didn't really direct it. It kind of directed itself. I don't truly believe that, so let's hear the scene, and then we'll talk about it.
I'll say one thing about it for you, dude.
Okay.
The scene is good for several reasons, but one reason is because it was beautifully written by Bud Schulberg. It's a perfectly written scene, and in a kind of a tough language that is poetic in itself, that's all.
And the scene is played by Marlon Brando and Rod Steiger.
Right.
That skunk we got you for the manager, he brought you along too fast.
It wasn't him, Charlie, it was you. You remember that night in the garden, you came down my dressing room and said, kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson. You remember that? This ain't your night. My night, I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it. It was you, Charlie.
There's a musicality in the way those two actors read their lines that is really something. Did you work with them on that?
No. I didn't direct that scene much. I didn't direct that scene, really. By that time in the shooting schedule, both Rod and Marlon knew what they had. And then the lines themselves are so beautifully written. Instead of a bum, which is what I am, that's the way those people talk. They're perfectly written lines, and Marlon naturally took to them.
You know, it's great. It's your classic talking head scene. It's two guys in a cab. In the rear view window, there's actually Venetian blinds, so you can't even see the traffic coming through.
There isn't any.
Yeah, so no. it's just two guys talking.
If we had traffic, Terry, it would have been a distraction, wouldn't it? Don't you think so?
Yeah, no, I think you're right, because you're just totally focused on their faces and on what they're saying.
Right.
You have really taken pride in directing actors who are encouraged to ask questions about what they're doing.
Yes.
What kind of questions did Brando ask you about this role? Any questions?
Very, very little. I think we had a instinctive fraternity. I think we understood each other almost from the word go very well. And we would talk a lot about other things, but not a hell of a lot about the role. This role is written thoroughly. When he says taking dives, Palookaville, all that, and it's written very thoroughly and beautifully. And he didn't need much instruction. I mean, I wasn't kidding in the book. I wasn't being falsely modest. I think I'm a damn good director and have been a damn good director. But in this scene, I didn't direct that scene much. I just put them there and so on.
Elia Kazan recorded in 1988. We're remembering writer Bud Schulberg, who died on Wednesday at the age of 95. Schulberg won an Oscar for his On the Waterfront screenplay. He also wrote the screenplays for The Harder They Fall and A Face in the Crowd. He first became known for his 1941 novel, What Makes Sammy Run, about a movie producer who ruthlessly pushes his way to the top. Terry spoke with Bud Schulberg in 1990.
Now, you teamed up with Elia Kazan to do On the Waterfront after you had both testified to the House Un-American Activities Committee. He said in his memoirs that he felt that there was a bond of understanding between the two of you because you'd both been through that. Did you feel that way?
Well, I felt our bond of understanding began when nobody in Hollywood would do On the Waterfront, when every major studio turned down On the Waterfront, which I think they should remember, and that Kazan's, when I was irritated about it, Kazan said to me, Bud, I want to make this movie. If I have to take a handheld camera and go down on the docks myself, I'm going to make this movie. I think that's where the bond began. As for the testimony, although it is true that we were both what they call friendly witnesses before that committee, I really, I reject the theory that the ending of that picture or the fact that Terry Molloy testifies was related that closely. I spent about a year and a half on the waterfront. I really love the Rebel Longshoreman. I saw Father John Corydon go through hell, even with his superiors, and he was...
This is the priest that the Carl Malden character.
That's right. He was really... Father Barry was really... Father Barry in the movie was patterned directly on this waterfront priest. And I saw Father John or Father Barry in the movie urging these men to get up and testify at the waterfront crime hearings. And I attended them every day. They went for about 5 or 6 weeks. And I spoke to Kazan about it, looking for the ending of our film. And I said, Gadj, I think we have found the ending for our film, because these men are saying, my God, if I get up and do that, you know what's going to happen. I'll be in the North River. That's what they call the Hudson River. I'll be gone. And that was the real source of the ending of that picture. It really was not the fact that we were saying, how can we get back at these people? I've had some disagreement with Kazan about that. He could say, and I'll make this very brief, that maybe that intensified his ability to direct that scene, or that it gave him some additional emotion, but I never thought of it in writing it, and I was the writer of it.
Have you ever had regrets or second thoughts about testifying?
Not really, no. No, I haven't, because I don't see what the only alternative for me was to seem to be on the side of the communists. And if you ever saw Vijay Jerome, a commissar for cultural affairs, who tells you that you can't write the book unless it's checked over by this or that or the other, I felt the American people had a right to know that.
In spite of the evils perpetrated in the name of communism at the time that you were testifying, did you ever feel that you were participating in what was practically a witch hunt in America that was having a devastating effect on the lives of the people being pursued.
I thought two things. I thought it should have been done more carefully, but I thought that the people who were fighting here and calling it a witch hunt should have realized that if they are against a blacklist, that they should also involve themselves in the fight against the death list, and that while writers may be better than any of us were being killed in the Soviet Union, they seem to have absolutely no interest in that.
I want to ask you, I know that you have, you've had a stutter on and off through your life, and I wonder how that's affected how you've dealt with Hollywood, and I mean that in the sense that I know so much about Hollywood is about, like, pitching the script and making the deal, and there's all this fast talk, I assume, that goes on, and how comfortable you felt with that.
I've never been crazy about the story conferences. I remember Bill Faulkner, William Faulkner worked out in Hollywood a good deal more than people realize. And one time they had one of these meetings that you're describing, and they're saying, now, the boy and girl have to meet cute and fast, and how can we show right away, instantly, that they are closely related? And a lot of the fast talkers were ad-libbing meet cute ideas. And Faulkner, who was rather withdrawn, extremely withdrawn, wrote a note, and he handed it to a friend of mine, and my friend told me about it right after the meeting. And the note said, what if they were brother and sister? So, to answer your question, I guess there are some people who can get up there and pitch, and there are others who can get up to bat without saying much and hit a home run.
Bud Schulberg recorded in 1990. He died on Wednesday at the age of 95.